Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer? Where is it? Where's the hammer?
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Where's the hammer? Is it on the, go up on the other floor. Somebody go up there and stop the hammering. Stop the hammering.
Glenn sounds really angry right about now.
I have never heard Glenn this angry.
I know. He's really ticked off. Wow. That's not the Glenn I know.
We have too much fun here.
I tell you what. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Rob in Kentucky. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how's it going? Yeah, different question to ask you. Okay. I have a friend that's like my daughter. She's going to be baptized in Nazarene Church. She wants me to be baptized with her. Can I do that? I went to the RKF program 34 years ago, baptized and everything. And then I don't know if I can do that or not.
Okay, so slow down a little bit, Rob. So your daughter is getting baptized in a Nazarene church. Is that right?
No, she's not my daughter. She's not my daughter. And she's being baptized in the Nazarene church coming up soon. She asked me if I would be baptized with her.
Okay.
I don't know.
Now, are you Catholic or what is your background?
I'm Catholic. I went to the RCA program 34 years ago.
Okay.
And I've been a Knights Columbus for 34 years.
Were you baptized then when you came into the Catholic Church 34 years ago?
Yes. Okay. 34 years ago.
Oh, 34. Okay. So the answer is no. The easy, quick answer is no. The reason is because you can't repeat baptism. Once it's done, what's the saying, one and done? Once you've been baptized, and we're talking about a valid baptism, it can't be repeated.
Yes.
Yeah. So not only would there be no point in doing it, but also it would be a countersign. It would be kind of a contradiction if you were to do that, because it would be saying something and it would be suggesting that you believe something that you actually don't believe. And it wouldn't be doing anything. So I would say for that second reason, because it's a countersign, I wouldn't do it for that reason also.
Okay. Answer my question very much.
Okay. Hey, good talking to you, Rob. Thank you so much. Let's go to Annie now in Virginia. Hello, Annie. Hello, Annie.
Hello there.
I got a bad feeling about this.
All right. Well, young Thomas or Gabby, whichever one of you wants to pick up with her, we'll see if we can't get her squared away. Let's go to Kathy now in central Wisconsin. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I'm calling, well, first of all, I want to thank you so much for recommending Shtizzle.
Oh, good. Enjoyed it. Huh?
I rewatched the entire three seasons for a second time already. That's how good it is.
I'm glad you liked it.
I did. I just adored it. And
Nancy, before you go on, Nancy and I really loved it too, but people may not know what you're talking about. So the name of the series is Shtizzle. And it's hard to explain, isn't it? How do you explain that to your friends? They have to just see it, right?
Oh, I tell everyone they have to see it. Shtizzle is the last name of a Jewish family.
Right.
And that's the way I explain it to them. And I warn them that, you know, they speak in Hebrew or Yiddish, whatever, and that there will be subtitles. But, you know, there's almost like a reverence to it.
Yep. It's an amazing series, and how that got onto, it's just what was very well done. When it ended, it was very, it's like, you know, when your favorite song is over, you know, it's kind of, you wish it could keep going on, but we wished that there could have been more to it, but the way the story ended is where it ended, as you know.
Right. Although I have to tell you that, recently, you know how YouTube, when you watch YouTube, it's like it reads your mind and things that you're thinking about, suddenly you have YouTube videos that pop up in your feed, you know, that are recommended to you. It was kind of strange, but yeah, I've been getting YouTube videos encouraging me to watch interviews with some of the actors and actresses and so on.
Oh, okay.
And in one that I watched, I've only watched, I think, two of them that were short, but there is talk of producers who created the sitcom Friends.
Okay.
They are contemplating doing Shtizzle.
No kidding.
For American television, yeah.
That's interesting.
So, which
I hope they don't dumb it down.
Leap. That's just it. It kind of made my heart leap. But at the same time, you know, they'll probably speak in English and so on. And I just think that reverence is going to be lost.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, I hope that they don't dumb it down because it's good for what it is. And yeah, great. So we'll see. That's news to me.
Okay, but that's not really why I called. I mean, it's okay. Part of the reason. My question was, as I told the screener, was I was wondering if you can briefly explain why Martin Luther chose to remove the seven books of the Old Testament from the Protestant Bibles. Mm-hmm. And this relates to Shtizzle because since watching that program, I'm interested in the Orthodox Jews. You know, why they believe as they do, why they, you know, they're so strict. They're so strict, which is mm-hmm. admirable. And yet at the same time, there are some things that just kind of, you know, I find a little strange. But, you know, I kind of compare them to the Amish in that way, in a sense. I mean, mm-hmm. I realize they're vastly different. But anyway, it's just gotten me interested why these seven books were omitted because, well, again, you know, they're part of the Jewish Bible. And, you know, without Judaism, there would be no Christianity, is the way I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could explain why they were removed, I'd appreciate that.
Okay, so there's a lot that can be said in response to this question, and I don't have enough time to give you anything more than a cursory sort of sketch.
Oh,
but I will say this and also give you a resource that you can turn to that will help you go deeper. So the seven books that we know as the deuterocanonical books, so we're talking about 1st and 2nd Maccabees and Judith and Baruch and Tobit, etc. These books of the Old Testament were known to the Jews after the diaspora, after the Babylonian captivity, which took place about 600 years before the time of Jesus. It was one of several forcible diasporas that took place. And the phenomenon was that when the Jews who had been taken out of Israel, and in some cases, many of them, they went to Babylon or modern-day Iraq, they lost touch very quickly, after a couple of generations at least, with their native Hebrew tongue. And so the language that arose in the Babylonian captivity in that area is what we know as Aramaic, which is a hybrid of Hebrew and Babylonian. And so that was one whole group of Jews. Another whole group of Jews were those that were dispersed more into the Greek-speaking Mediterranean world. And so there was a high concentration of them in places like Egypt. And so about 300 years before the time of Christ, the king of Egypt at that time, Ptolemy, he wanted to be able to read the Hebrew scriptures. He was a God-fearer, from what we can tell. And he wanted to be able to read the scriptures, but he didn't know Hebrew. And so he commanded that these books be translated from the Hebrew into Greek. And this is where the term Septuagint comes from. It refers to the Greek version of the Jewish Bible. And the word Septuagint comes from the Greek word for 70. And the story goes that there were 70 translators, and it took them 70 days. And when they compared the results, they were miraculously alike. And there are variations on that story, but the main thing is that's where this term Septuagint comes from. And so the scriptures were now available to the Greek-speaking Jews who no longer knew Hebrew anymore, and so they could read them, and they did read them. And this is the version of scripture that proliferated in that part of the world. So what you have is a canon, although they didn't have a closed canon. The canon of Scripture is which books are deemed to be inspired and therefore canonical. The word canon, C-A-N-O-N, comes from a Greek word which means like a measuring rod or a way to measure the distance or the length of something. So these are the books that were accepted as inspired by God. So what happened was, to fast forward to the time of Christ, when many of the Jews returned to the land of Israel, they brought with them not only their knowledge of Aramaic from the Babylonian captivity, but also many of them their knowledge of Greek and their use of the Septuagint from the Greek-speaking areas. So when Jerusalem was conquered and destroyed by the Romans in the year 70, the temple religion was overthrown, the temple itself was destroyed, animal sacrifice stopped, and Judaism as it was known at the time of Jesus was in essence destroyed. And what arose from those ashes was the Judaism that we know more today, like Shtisel, those people. It was the Judaism of the synagogue. They had synagogues before that, but there was no more temple worship. There was no more animal sacrifice. The priesthood had been disbanded and destroyed, etc. So what happened was the surviving Jews had a really hard time, especially the rabbis, imagining that there could be books that were inspired by God for the Bible in a pagan language. And Greek was a pagan language to the Jews. And so when they considered some of these books, one of the reasons given was that the earliest version of these books, the earliest copies of these books that they could find were in Greek. And so the presumption was that they were originally written in Greek. And so that was an intolerable idea for them, that there's no way God is going to use a pagan language for inspired scripture. And look, these same pagans, the Latin-speaking pagans, the Greek-speaking pagans, they just destroyed Jerusalem. They just destroyed the temple. So that was one of the attitudes against these books. Now, it wasn't for the content of the books per se. It wasn't as though the Jews objected to the contents of the books, but rather the provenance of the books. So one thing to note is that in the 1940s and into the 1950s, when the Qumran discovery took place near the Dead Sea, the researchers discovered fragments and in some cases larger pieces of these books in Hebrew that were older and predated these Greek manuscripts. So that's part of the puzzle, as you can see that there's evidence that would indicate that the books may very well have been inspired and written in Hebrew, and then were later translated into Greek. But these are things for scholars to sift through, and there's a lot of work being done on that. Suffice to say, there was in the early church a recognition and an acceptance of these seven books of the Old Testament, but not by everybody. So there were some significant figures in the early church, Catholic figures, who didn't accept them. So St. Athanasius in the 200s did not accept them. St. Jerome in the 400s did not accept them. The 300s, I should say, did not accept them. And so they were two examples of some significant scholars who didn't agree with them. But the church as a whole accepted them. And in the year 383 at the Council of Rome, Pope Damasus I, he oversaw this regional council that codified the canon as we have it today, including those seven books in the Old Testament. So 73 books were what were said to be the canonical scriptures. And there were several councils in North Africa as well, so in Hippo and Carthage at the end of the 4th and end of the 5th century, where these same canons were reiterated. And that's where things stood for the better part of 1,000 years, actually more than 1,000 years, until the time of the Council of Florence in the 15th century, and the canon was reiterated again then with those seven books included, and then again a century later at the Council of Trent. So there's a long historical process, and I'm just skimming the peaks here. I can't give you many more of the details, but the story is well worth your time to read, and I would recommend two resources, Kathy. One is called Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger by Gary Michuta, M-I-C-H-U-T-A. Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger. Now, he concentrates primarily on the centuries before the time of Christ, but also he looks closely at the rabbinic comments that were made about these books in the aftermath of the destruction of Jerusalem. So that's a very valuable book. I think you'll find it very helpful. Second book is a bit more general, and that's called Where We Got the Bible. And that's by Bishop Henry Graham. And that is published, any Catholic bookstore will carry it. You can order it from your local Catholic bookstore. But that, too, will give you a broader picture of not just those seven books, but also, you know, how did the canon of Scripture come into existence at all? How do we know which books belong? That's another book that will be very helpful. So I'll leave it at that. I think I've already given you probably more of an answer than you bargained for, but it's a big topic, and there's a lot more to be said about it. And I think you'll find those things fascinating. And I'm glad to know that you like Stissel. I had a lady come up to me after Mass at church at my parish a few weeks ago, and she said, I watched it, we watched it, we watched Stissel, and we loved it. So I feel like I'm batting 1,000 here when it comes to that. Let's go to Annie now in Virginia. We'll try Annie again. Good morning, Annie.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Been waiting a long time, so... I have a question. How do you get rid of a demonic spirit of an obsession? And how do you get rid of a spirit of transference, in particular with siblings? And
what do you mean by a spirit of transference?
Wow. I can only describe it as someone wanting you to have something, wanting to dump their evil spirit on you, or wanting to give you a problem that they have so that they don't have that problem anymore, something of that nature. And also, where can I go, what resources can I read in order to get more concept of demonic spirits and how to defeat them? Besides prayer, fasting, confession, and all the other sacraments that we do participate in and that I am an active member of.
Okay. Good. So I'm sorry to hear that you're being harassed this way. You're in Virginia. I don't know which diocese you're in, but what I would do is get in touch with the diocesan exorcist. You can do that by going to the website and inquire how does one go about getting in touch with the diocesan exorcist. He'll be the priest who's delegated this ministry by the bishop, and find out how to go about doing that, and then do that. Get in touch with him, make an appointment, and then see what he has to say. He'll ask you questions, he'll try to evaluate it, and he'll help you determine whether or not this is something that is truly diabolical, or maybe partly diabolical, but also partly human nature, or it could be something that's not diabolical at all. It's hard to say, and that's where he can help you. Now, assuming that there is some diabolical harassment or infestation or whatever, what I would recommend is follow the exorcist's advice, and it may involve things like you need to come in, we're going to pray prayers of deliverance. It could go up to and including something as significant as an exorcism. These things do happen. So those are the things I would recommend, because he would be an expert in knowing how to determine what are the next steps to do. In the meantime, you said you're receiving the sacraments and you're praying. That's all good. Keep doing that. If there's any paraphernalia in your home, if there are tarot cards or Ouija boards or any of that craziness, be sure to get rid of all that. I'm guessing you probably already have any, but if there's anything that in any way would be a foothold for the evil one in your home, destroy it, get rid of it. I would also recommend a few books. And in addition to talking to the exorcist, read a book by Father Cliff Ermatinger, E-R-M-A-T-I-N-G-E-R, Ermatinger. It's called The Devil's Role in the Spiritual Life, St. John of the Cross's teaching on Satan's involvement at every stage of spiritual growth. So this is really helpful, because St. John of the Cross, he had a lot of experience dealing with this. And so for a modern audience, Father Cliff brings this wisdom to you, and you'll be able to start applying it in your own daily life. I would also recommend a book by a late exorcist. His name was Father Gabriel Amorth. It's called An Exorcist Tells His Story, published by Ignatius Press. And that will give you some more insights on some of the things to look out for and things to avoid and etc. Well, there's that music. Sorry, I don't have more time, Annie, but those are the steps I would take next. And keep your radar up. Keep the prayer going. Bless your home with holy water. And thanks for the call. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. This hour is sponsored by Christendom College. Send your child to Christendom College's high school summer program, the best week ever. Get 50% off by using the promo code RELEVANTRADIO. Spots fill up very quickly, so apply today at thebestweekever.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
This is new to me. I haven't heard this version. Hilarious. You just found that, huh?
I did, yeah. You inspired me to go look for more.
Find the Journey one, too, because that's pretty funny.
On it.
All right. Yeah. So these are now, how did you describe it to me during the break? They're putting it through Adobe?
No. So they,
what are they doing?
They put it through a program that takes out the lyrics. So you can actually separate drums, bass, guitar, yeah, and vocals. And then you lay them down in like an Adobe edition or whatever music editing software you have. And you have the different tracks. And they just moved the vocals over one offbeat. Yeah, it was one offbeat, right? And it ruins everything.
It does, in a beautiful way.
It's beautiful, yeah.
Thank you for that. So, by the way, I've gotten a couple of requests in just the last few minutes. How do you spell Shtissel? It's easy. It's spelled SHT. Careful now, SHTISEL. Got that down, Cyrus? SHTISEL, Shtissel. And as the lady said, that's just the last name of this ultra-Orthodox Jewish family. It's their last name. Like my last name is Madrid. Their last name is Shtissel. So there you have it. And if you're searching for it, just search for that. You're going to find it. Let's go to Stephanie in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Patrick. I was listening to the lady called in, and she was asking about demonic oppression.
Yeah.
Or obsession. And there is a phenomenal guy here in Nashville, Tennessee named Jansen Bagwell. His website is called wholecatholic.com. He does group, like Zoom online deliverance classes. He speaks at the local churches. Most of the priests, at least all the ones who really understand spiritual warfare, have gone through personal coaching and deliverance through him. He is phenomenal.
Is he a priest?
He's not. He was orphaned. His story is amazing. His conversion story is on his website, and it'd be worth having him on the show, or at least on the show on EWTN where they talk about conversions. He was orphaned by the time he was 14. And
let me just jump in, if I may, Stephanie. I'd like to offer a word of caution. Lay people are not supposed to be engaged in, I mean, deliverance is one thing, and we can be involved in that, prayers of deliverance, St. Michael the Archangel, and things like that. But full-blown exorcisms and the role of an exorcist as such is not something that lay people are to be part of, because it requires the special delegation of the bishop, and it also requires the ministry of the Sacrament of Holy Orders to fully accomplish what is necessary in that ministry, the ministry of exorcist. So
He works completely differently. And Father Ripperger has sent cases to him. And he has actually taught priests a different... He has the approval of our bishop. And he very much understands authority and where you can... He begins with teaching you your sacraments. the sacrament of baptism and the covenant and like what you get, what you're expected.
I understand, Stephanie, but I'm just going to go on record here and say I personally do not endorse the notion of lay people doing that. I mean, obviously, if his bishop and he have an understanding, that's between them. But generally speaking, it's not something that lay people are supposed to be doing. So I appreciate the call. Thank you. Let's go to Judy now in California. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Patrick. Okay, so no pun intended, but I have a burning question. I was listening to a speaker this morning, and you were telling her that when we go to heaven, we get our bodies back.
Right.
And this has been something I've been kind of contemplating, deciding which way to go. So does the Catholic faith believe in cremation?
No, the church discourages it strongly, and there was a long time when the church forbade it. I mean, as a choice, I mean, sometimes you have no choice in times of war, let's say, or disease, like a cholera epidemic or something. There are times when it's unavoidable, but as a general choice, the church for the longest time forbade it. Catholics were not allowed to be cremated or not allowed to choose cremation. But the church has relaxed its restriction on that. And I kind of wish the church hadn't, but it did. And so that's how it is. You know, we're members of the church, so we do what the church says. But cremation will have no effect whatsoever on the disposition of the body on the day of judgment. That's the day when we will receive our bodies back. Both good and bad alike will receive their bodies back. So, you know, in the Creed, we talk about, I believe, in the resurrection of the body and the life of the world to come. That's what we're referring to when we say that. So cremation can't stop that. It can't prevent it because, you know, if you think about it, for all the eons of time that there have been human beings since Adam and Eve, all of them, with just maybe some millions of exceptions who may be recently buried, they've all gone back to the ground. Their bodies are all dissolved and gone back to the ground. So cremation can't change that, nor would, you know, the bodies decomposing change that.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I'm a fairly new Catholic, but I have relatives that have been Catholic, and we've lost a few, and both of them were cremated. So I was wondering, I'm like, well, you know I've heard that you're not supposed to get cremated, but these lifelong Catholics are getting cremated when, you know, when they were getting buried. I'm like, oh, wait a minute.
It is permitted. So if you went, for example, Judy, to the U.S. Catholic Bishop's website, it's usccb.org, type in the word cremation, and it'll pull up a number of different places. But you want to drill down to the place where the church there gives the guidelines on, you know, for massive Christian burial and when people die, what is prescribed. Now, you'll see there where it says that it is permitted. It's not encouraged, though. And for me personally, I mean, I can understand if people have financial restrictions, and sometimes there are those things that you have to work with, and cremation is a less expensive way to have somebody's remains taken care of. And I understand that. And sometimes people get into situations where they just can't avoid it. But aside from that, the very idea of destroying the body that way is repugnant to me. It's just abhorrent to me. And
I agree.
Whenever anyone asks me, what do you recommend? I say, well, I definitely don't recommend cremation. To me, it's not a worthy way to. Now, I don't want anyone to be offended, because I realize there are some people who have made that choice, and sometimes it's financial. I'm not judging anybody, but just as a thing, as an option, I personally would advise against it.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, thank you so much for taking my call, and that answered my question.
I'm glad, Judy. Thank you, and welcome home. How long ago did you become Catholic?
It's been about 5 years now.
Wonderful. Well, I hope the honeymoon phase is still going for you.
Yeah, and I'm so glad I stumbled onto your radio station. It was on a bumper sticker. So keep sending out those bumper stickers.
That is so great. I'm happy to hear that. Are you in SoCal or NorCal?
No, SoCal.
So you're probably listening on 93 KHJ.
93KHJ.
I can't quite hit that high note. Yeah, something like that. Well, that's great. Yeah. Thanks, Judy. It's great to know that you're out there. Oh,
bumper stickers.
Boy, you know that?
Where am I supposed to get it?
Well, it just so happens at relevantradio.com, if you look at the navigation bar, listen, support, faith, contact, about, sponsorship, give now, just mouse over support and it'll open up a menu and just zing right down, second from the bottom, request a bumper sticker. It's easy and they're free. And all you have to do is tell us where to send a couple of bumper stickers. And the way you'll know which one you want is by where you live, because you can open the other little bit here where it says, okay, what state are you in? And then you find the station closest to you. So like 93KHJ.
93KHJ.
Yeah. I love that. I'm on 93KHJ. That's hard for me to imagine. But anyway, you just pop that in there and then we'll send you some bumper stickers. So you heard the lady. She found out about the Catholic Church from a bumper sticker, which is awesome. Let's go to Pat now in San Antonio, Tejas. Good morning, Pat.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 13-year-old grandson who's not Catholic, but he's interested in the Catholic faith. And okay. One of the things that he wants to do is read a Catholic Bible. Now, he has access to a St. Joseph Catholic Bible, second edition.
Okay.
I'm just wondering if you might recommend something that might be better.
Yeah, the St. Joseph edition, that's the New American Bible, and it's sturdy, it's serviceable, it's the version of Scripture that Catholics would hear at Mass every day. Or at the very least, every Sunday. Sorry, I had a frog in my throat. The problem with the New American Version, the New American Bible, the problem is, for the casual reader, the footnotes and the introductory explanatory sections. That's a problem because there's some things in there that come out of a school of biblical scholarship that has been around for, 100 years, but it calls into question things in the Bible that traditionally the Catholic Church accepts and promotes and proclaims, etc. So it involves a kind of what I would regard as a hermeneutic of suspicion, which casts doubt, sometimes explicitly, sometimes implicitly, on things. So things like, Jesus didn't really... the whole miracle of the loaves and the fish, that wasn't really the miracle. The miracle was that the people shared their food with each other. That's not a miracle. I've shared my food with people before. That's not a miracle. Or in the explanatory notes for the Gospel according to St. Matthew, it says, well, first of all, Matthew didn't write this. And we don't really know who exactly wrote it, but we're just going to use the customary form of referring to this as the Gospel according to St. Matthew, even though he didn't really write this. We don't really know who wrote it. We're just going to, for convenience sake, we're going to call it the Gospel of Matthew. So what happens is, here and there in these notes, some places the notes are quite good and helpful, but in other places they're terrible, and they actually lead people astray. It's so crazy to say this, but... The deficiencies in this are problematic, and people sometimes get led astray, or it introduces doubt. Did Jesus really say this? Did he really do this? I mean, take another example. In the footnote for 1 Corinthians chapter 3, beginning in verse 10, where St. Paul is talking about a man who built his life on the foundation of Christ, and the day that he's judged, his life and his works are being revealed with fire, and the fire is burning away the bad works, wood, hay, and straw, and the man is suffering the pain of going through this fiery purification, and he's not in heaven yet, but when he's finished with this, he will be in heaven. Okay, so he's like describing purgatory without using the term, and the footnote says, this isn't talking about purgatory. Say what? St. Augustine wrote a whole treatise on topics like this, and he and other church fathers routinely invoked 1 Corinthians chapter 3 as a biblical support for the biblical teaching on purgatory. So for that reason, I realize I'm sort of on a soapbox now. Please forgive me, Pat. You probably didn't bargain for all of this. But I personally would not give somebody that Bible for that reason. With all of its other strengths, and it has some strengths, that's a deficiency that I have found for some people it's very problematic. So rather, I would recommend the Ignatius Bible, which is the Revised Standard Version Catholic Edition. There's a second edition of that, and that's published by Ignatius Press. Very good. Has footnotes. It doesn't have as many, and it definitely does not have problematic explanatory notes that could lead people astray. So that's called the Ignatius Bible. And then another Bible similar to that, it's a different translation, but it's also very high quality. It's called the Augustine Bible. And that, too, is a translation from the Hebrew and the Greek into English. It's very good. So those are two I would recommend. Now, if only somebody were to undertake a revision of the Douay-Rheims and update some of the archaic language so that the these and the thous could be updated. That, too, is a very good translation in English. It was the premier version of the Bible in English for 400-plus years. So that's another good one, but it has some of that archaic language. But those three are quite good.
Okay.
That's more of an answer than you asked for, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but it was very interesting. I appreciate that. But one other thing I'd like to ask you about, the catechism. Mm-hmm. I have a second edition catechism. It's, you know, probably 20 years old. Should I look for a new one?
No, that's fine. The one you have should be fine.
That's fine. Okay.
Yeah,
all right. I wasn't sure about updating that or not. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your help. Appreciate it.
You are most welcome. Thank you for that. This would be a good time to step aside for a break, and we'll come back with more. Real quick, just a reminder that Lent is right around the corner, and Father Rocky's Lenten Lessons on the Mass are available to you for free. There are video clips that last a little less than 2 minutes, and they'll come to your mailbox, your email box, that is, every day during Lent if you sign up by going to relevantradio.com/lessons. They're free. Just tell us where you'd like them sent, and you will learn about the Mass in ways you never thought possible. I'll be right back with more right after this. Looking for a new job? How about one that offers you opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester, an Illinois life insurance company not available in all states.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Rising up, back on the street. Did my time, took my chances.
These are so good.
So many times.
Did you post these yet, Cyrus?
I posted the other one. I'll get this one up in just a sec.
People want it. They want
so
it.
Funny.
It's neck and neck between this and Stissel.
They are really calling it about Stissel.
All right. I got to go to work. It's so bad, it's good. All right, so if you could pop a couple of those babies up there for people to look at or to listen to, check out the show Twitter feed. Yeah, Sarah's swaying to the music. She likes this.
She's dying right now.
You'll find these video clips at the show Twitter feed, at P. Madrid Show. Also on the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. All right. All right, this is agony. There's another one. Not now, though, but there's another one. Careless Whisper by Wham. That's another one.
What I'm doing all day.
Yeah. Yeah, you have found a new toy. Okay, let's go. Poor Sarah. Let's go to Thomas in Chicago. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, Patrick. Hey.
Hello.
Just wanted to get your opinion on my son's baptism. Okay. So my son was baptized 2 years ago in our parish church, and the priest who did the baptism was a retired, you know, kind of elderly priest.
Okay.
And I believe him to be a very, you know, good and holy man. But during the ceremony, it became obvious that sadly he's losing his memory. And as a result, you know, he accidentally omitted a lot of the normal parts of the rite of baptism. So, okay. For example, like he didn't involve the godparents at all. Where you do, you know, the renunciation of sin. But, you know, importantly, he did pour the water over our son and said the words of baptism.
Okay.
So, you know, at the end of the day, I believe he was baptized. So my question is this, you know, in your opinion, would it be necessary, you know, or I guess, or prudent to have the rite of baptism, you know, re-performed in some way? You know, I know, for example, if a baby was baptized in a hospital, then the church would say, you know, come on back to have the rite re-performed. At least that's my understanding. So that's my question. Just wanted to get your opinion on
sure.
that.
Sure. And you're a good dad and you want the best for your kids. I totally understand it. And I can understand why you're thinking about this. So strictly speaking, no, none of that would be necessary. It would be ideal if the full rite of baptism had been followed, had been performed. But the essence is the baptism itself. And that's not repeatable. So if, as you saw, you were there, so you witnessed this, if the priest poured the water over your child's head, and as he did so, he audibly said, I baptize you in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, then that is a valid baptism, assuming, obviously, that he used water. So those things yep. being present are sufficient. And so your son's baptism is no less efficacious, no less powerful, no less spiritually fruitful than it would have been if the Pope himself had used the full rite of baptism. And so as far as the benefits to your son are concerned, there is no difference whatsoever because the power is in the sacrament itself. So it's always better if the full rite can be used, but it's not necessary. And just to reiterate, there's no negative consequence or diminishment of any benefits to your son. You don't have to worry about that at all.
Okay, great. I really appreciate it, Patrick.
Yeah, for sure. And I could understand why you'd be concerned about it. So the next time, you know, the next baby that you have, then I would say, hey, maybe you could gently request a different priest to celebrate the sacrament for you.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. All right,
okay.
Awesome. Well, appreciate it.
You're welcome, Thomas. Great to talk to you. How about Cindy in West Bend, Wisconsin? Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning, Patrick.
Yes. How can I help?
Okay, well, I have a few questions. I'm just wondering if people can put spells on, if a person could put a spell on somebody. And I was also listening to your the Anne that called in. Mm-hmm. She was talking about things like that too. But transferring problems of mm-hmm. their own onto someone else, is that even possible for somebody to do like with a spell to transfer the problems of somebody else onto someone else?
Well, I don't want to speak because I don't have any authority or even in any real experience in this issue. So I don't want to speak as though I can tell you yes or no, but I don't think that that is the case. Certainly it's not the case if you are in the state of grace, if you're close to Christ, if you're frequenting the sacraments. Remember the Bible says greater is he who is in us than he who is in the world. And so you are not personally, you could be a target by somebody who wishes ill on you and tries to use the occult to accomplish that. But you yourself are not in jeopardy if you are in Christ, if you are in the state of grace. Now, for those who are not in the state of grace and who are living in the danger zone, sure, they can be incredibly vulnerable. And so my advice would be, these claims that some people make about transferring things and transference of spirits and things like that, that may or may not have some validity to it, but really only an exorcist would be in a good position to determine that. And so if you're concerned in your own life or your own family or somebody that you care about seems mm-hmm. to be undergoing that, I would check to see how can I be in touch with the exorcist for this diocese and then follow his good advice. Now, some exorcists have written books, and I mentioned one earlier by Father Gabriel Amorth. It's called An Exorcist Tells His Story. Now, I remember when I first read that book, I was surprised at how prevalent things like hexes and curses and spells and evil eyes and things like that, a lot of which I think are more prevalent in, quote unquote, the old country, where maybe these things are more entrenched in a social way or a cultural way. But he talks about those things, about how people can be cursed or hexes and things like that. So I don't discount it as a phenomenon, because the exorcists talk about that happening. But it seems to me, based on my reading of these exorcists, if I understood them correctly, my sense is that the people who are vulnerable to those things are the people who are away from the sacraments, who are not in the state of grace, etc. So
okay, that's my concern. But also, can people? I know of somebody she's married to a relative of mine, and she's a Pentecostal. But I heard that she does seances and things like that, and she would be the type of
big
person
red
that would
flag.
Be able to put a spell.
Yeah.
What's that?
I said big red flag. Didn't mean to interrupt you, but yeah. So here's the thing. So when somebody starts dabbling in the occult, seances, tarot cards, Ouija boards, palm reading, astrology, all that stuff, what you've basically done is you've opened the door now for these entities, because they're not good angels. It's not God that these people are communicating with. They're demons. So by doing that, you know, you've rung the devil's doorbell. He's going to answer that door. And if you open the door up, he's going to come in, and many more besides. So that's why those portals, if you want to use the term, are so dangerous, because even people who are just, they don't realize the harm that they're doing, they're still doing harm, and they're opening themselves up to the influence of the evil one. So,
okay, so considers her, she can, I mean, she's a Christian or whatever. I'm sorry to have interrupted you.
No, it's
okay.
But
she's a Christian. If she's a Christian and she goes to church, she's a Pentecostal, but, you know, she's not particularly a nice person. Maybe I shouldn't say that, but she isn't. And she would be the type to put a spell on somebody. But when somebody is doing that as a Christian, they're committing a sin, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because what she's doing is offending against the first commandment. You know, I'm the Lord your God, you shall have no strange gods before me. And that's what she's doing. So she may pay lip service to Jesus, she may pay lip service to God as such, but she's, by doing these things, she is seeking power or knowledge or the ability to know the future or to manipulate reality through the agency of evil spirits, through demons. And so she's, you know, she's definitely not doing something that's compatible with Christianity.
Okay, that's what I thought. That's what I thought, it wasn't compatible. But if she's doing seances and you know, supposedly, you know, she had a seance and supposedly talked to my mom. I that's what I heard, and another relative or whatever. And, you know, I didn't go to that. I certainly wouldn't go to something like that, but,
no, stay far away from it.
Yes, I, right.
My advice, and forgive my interruption, my advice would be just have zero to do with any of that and put the word out, put the warning out. You know, this is of the devil, this is evil, this will destroy you if you pursue this, stay away from it. Pray for her, and have nothing to do with it whatsoever. So I know you have a phone call to answer. I hope that that's helpful to you. Thank you. Let's go to George now in Sunnyvale, California. Hi, George.
Hello, Patrick Madrid.
Hello, George.
I'm a Roman Catholic, and I go to Our Lady of Peace Church. And I thank you for being God's servant and for the effort you give to God. You're truly helpful.
Thank you.
My mother was having me cough for you to answer my questions about Mary, but if you could recommend a book on that in a minute. But sure.
Hit me with your best shot, because we only have about a little less than 2 minutes.
2 minutes? Okay. I'm seeking God, and I'm learning the faith, and especially from this Christian YouTuber. And I've stopped my sexual sin, and I'm really giving to God. And I know his objections seem very biblical, especially against the church. You're an apologetic, and mm-hmm. you could answer a lot of questions for me if you could. And reach the youth if you could do a debate with him.
Well, I don't know if I have any more debates, in me at my age now. Who knows what God hasn't planned? I did a debate. I've done, I don't know, about a dozen or so public debates, George, and they are available. One in particular was on Mary and the Saints. I debated James White in 2002, I believe it was, and it's called The Great Debate, and it's about Mary and the Saints. And we talk a lot about statues and images and praying to saints and honoring saints. So that was a full-on two-hour debate, and it really dug into all these issues. I doubt that YouTube person has any different arguments than what came out in that debate. But that's available if you want to look it up, called The Great Debate. And as far as books are concerned, okay, good. As far as books are concerned, I would recommend Tim Staples' book. It's called Behold Your Mother. Behold Your Mother. You're writing that down, George?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay, get that book, because in it, he just not only explains and defends Catholic teaching on Mary, but he answers all of the objections. So start there. I think you'll find it very helpful. Till next time, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me.